Marriage Today presents Disarming Destructive Dominance by Jimmy Evans.
In this seminar, we talk about how to disarm several very problematic issues that keep us from being intimate. And I want to talk about dominance. Now, we are the only animals not created for dominance. We took a trip to Africa. We spent 3 weeks in the bush in Africa about 12 or 14 years ago. And every animal group in Africa, every animal group, one of them dominates the other. That's just simply the way they're made. But when God created mankind in Genesis 2, there's never a reference to one being over the other. That's the way God created them. And in Ephesians 5, when the roles of marriage are explained in Ephesians 5, it begins in verse 21 by saying, submit to one another in the fear of Christ. And then it tells women how to submit, and then it tells men how to submit. Karen and I never discuss who the boss of our marriage is because the boss of our marriage is Jesus Christ. But when we began in marriage, I dominated Karen. I had a very dominant personality. And because of that, we had no intimacy. We had a horrible marriage. We had everything I'm going to describe here was Karen and me early in our marriage. But we learned to overcome it. We learned to disarm it. And now we have a wonderful marriage where we share everything together. Let me give you a definition of dominance when I talk about this. It means disproportionate control of the relationship and those elements common to the relationship, like children, like money, those types of things. It means someone has more stock than the other person. If there's a company and you both have 50% of the stock, and that's a good marriage. In a dominant marriage, someone has more stock. In fact, sometimes someone has all the stock. And 100% of the decisions are made by one person. If you can picture a dollhouse, and you crank the lid back on a dollhouse and you're looking down into a dollhouse, a good family, a functional family, what you'll see is you'll see two big rooms in this house. And that's mom and dad. Mom and dad have the same size rooms. And then when children are born, they really don't have a room. They don't really get to say anything related to the family. As they get older, we may talk to them about where we go on vacation or where we go out to eat tonight or something like that. And then the older a child gets, we're trying to help them to grow up as a responsible adult. So we give them a little bit more voice in the family. So they have a room. And, they get 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Their room grows. It never gets nearly as big as our room. But then when they're 18, we kick them out of the house because they get real opinionated. And so we want them to leave at that point. You know what I'm talking about. So, but that's a healthy child. A healthy child gets a voice in the family. The older they get a voice, never to rival our room. And mom and dad's room are always the same size. When you look into a dysfunctional family, what you'll see is a big room. A room that's bigger than everybody else's. Okay. Now, dominance is gender neutral. There is as many dominant men as are women. Okay. About half and half. So it's not a male thing. It's not a female thing. It's just a human thing. So you look down in this house and there's a big room and the other spouse has a smaller room and the kids have small rooms. Now, in a really dysfunctional family, the kids have the biggest rooms. And there are families where the kids run the family. Okay, and that's the worst that you can possibly have. But in marriage, when we talk about dominance, there are three basic ways that dominance is exercised. It's manipulation, intimidation, or domination. Now, I dominated Karen, somewhat intimidated her, because I was verbally abusive. Manipulation, intimidation, domination. Here's how it manifests when people are being dominant. Guilt, shame, punishment for resistance or challenge. I'm going to punish you if you don't do what I want. Threats of divorce, affairs, self-harm, force of personality, controlling spirit, refusal to receive input, nagging, abuse, those types of things. And so control is what we're talking about. Control is exhibited in different forms. There are three basic types of dominance, and that is there's global dominance. And that is one person controls everything. There's selective dominance where a spouse might not control everything, but they control the money. They control the children. They control the home or whatever like that. And then there's seasonal dominance. There might be times under stress or times when you're fighting in the marriage that, you know, you take control of something that you wouldn't normally be control of. Now, let me show you this. This is interesting. I've done this all over the world, many thousands of people. I'm going to ask you two questions. And I want you to respond by raising your hand if you agree with what I'm saying. But I want you to look around. I want you to look around at the group, and I want you to see the number of hands that go up. How many of you were raised in a home where one of your parents was clearly dominant over the other parent? Raise your hand. Okay, put your hands up. This happens all over the world. Look around. Look around. Look at all the hands that are up. Okay, I've got my hand up. Okay, because one of my parents was. Okay, put your hand down. How many of you believe, the ones that raised your hands, how many of you believe that that dominance had a negative effect on your parents' marriage and the family in general? Raise your hands. Look around. Every hand went back up that I can see. Every hand. All over the world. 70%. It's about 70% of any group, when you ask them that question, 70% of the hands immediately go up. People don't have to say, "Oh, let me think about that." You know, I mean, you know that one of your parents dominated the others. Now, one day maybe your children will be in one of my seminars. I'm going to ask them that question. What would they say? Okay. I want to go back and I want to say it just doesn't work. God didn't create us that way. It wasn't the original design for marriage. In fact, when Adam and Eve fell, that's when dysfunction and control came into the human race, and God cursed Eve and said, "You're going to try to control your husband, but he will dominate you." There's going to be a fight for dominance, and thank God that that curse can be removed in Jesus Christ. That we can remove that curse from our relationships. It's all over the world. It's all over the world in marriages, but here's the dangerous dynamic of dominance. First of all, it always creates damage. It always creates damage. It never works. If it worked, it'd be great. It just doesn't work. It certainly didn't work for Karen and me. In 1998, John Gottman, University of Washington, released a study. He had 130 newly married couples that he studied for 6 years. He took this 130 couples, studied them intensely for 6 years. They taught them active listening. Active listening is someone says something to you and you say, "Here's what I heard you say." Okay. And they practiced active listening for 6 years. At the same time he was studying that group, he had another group that he had been watching for 13 years. And they had not been taught active listening, but he was studying this other group for 13 years. At the end of the study with 130 couples and the other couples that he had been tracking, he came to the conclusion that active listening doesn't work. It didn't help at all. But what they found after studying all these couples for all those years is the common element of success in all the couples that had good marriages was shared control of the relationship. Here's the way they put it: receiving influence from each other. To the degree that you are willing to receive influence from your spouse, both of you are, is to the degree that you will have a marriage free of dominance, because dominance always creates destruction. It always creates damage. And so the consequences of dominance, first of all, is emotional distance. You're just not going to be close, because remember, in one of the teachings, I taught you that the number one need of a man is honor. The number one need of a woman is security. Dominance makes a man feel disrespected and a woman feel insecure. So when a man's being dominated, it emasculates him. When a woman is feeling dominated, she's feeling completely insecure, like she's not a partner in the relationship. She doesn't have any stock in the relationship. So it's always going to create emotional distance, and it always communicates disrespect. You never respect a person you control. If I respected you, I wouldn't control you. When I dominated Karen, I didn't respect her. I was a chauvinist. I just didn't think she was equal to me. I was raised in a family where there was a lot of chauvinism, and I had been taught that. And so I disrespected her. So it's going to communicate disrespect. You're going to lose passion. As soon as the dominance begins, the passion of the relationship is going to subside, and ultimately it becomes damaging and destructive. But let me tell you what it does to children. Dominance, when children grow up in a home where there's a dominant parent, it mismodels for them. And what research has proven is let me give you four types of family systems from worst to best. Okay. The worst type of families are female-dominated families. This is according to research now. Okay. The second worst are male-dominated families. Okay. Is then the next best is equalitarian. And equalitarian homes are homes where there's complete equality between men and women. But one of the things they notice in research is in equalitarian homes, the children lack ascendancy. And that means they don't know how to achieve properly. They don't know how to ascend socially because they didn't watch it. The number one best homes, according to research, are male-led homes where the husband treats the wife as an equal, but he initiates the well-being of the home. See, one of a woman's deepest needs is leadership, not dominance. Women want their husband to initiate the well-being of the children, the discipline, the spirituality of the home, the finances of the home, and the romance of the home. Women want their husband to be the loving initiator of the home with them being an equal. That's what makes women feel most secure and most well taken care of. And when children grow up in a home where they have a father who is a loving leader of the home, treating his wife as an equal, the children are most emotionally healthy and they have ascendancy. They understand what leadership looks like. They understand what it's like for someone to take the initiative. Okay, so if you don't have a male-led home, the next best is an equalitarian home. But other than that, when you have a male-dominated or a female-dominated home, you're going to have dysfunction within that. So let me explain something to you. You always marry according to your level of emotional health. Health marries health. Unhealth marries unhealth. There's always a balance to it. When Karen and I met, I never had an insecure day in my life. I was the class clown. I was, you know, popular. I was confident. I had too much ego, way too much ego. I thought I was God. I've never met a person with as low self-esteem as Karen when we got married, ever. Karen was beautiful, thought she was ugly, thought God hated her. She had self-hate. Literally, Karen was beautiful. I have a huge family. And I would take Karen, when we went into public, Karen stood behind me. And I would pull her out from behind me and introduce her like to a family member. And as soon as I finished introducing her, she was back behind me. It's like she was on a spring-loaded thing or something. You know, it's just like she just kept going behind me because she had such terrible self-esteem. We were the perfect match. I thought I was God. She thought she was the devil. It didn't work. It never works. This is the way God designed marriage to work. In fact, this is the way God designed marriage to work. For the man to be just a little bit more assertive than the woman, but to treat her as an equal. This is the perfect marriage. This might work a little bit with a woman a little bit more assertive, but it's not good for the male ego. But in this range right here, it's good. The further you get away from this, the worse it becomes. And sometimes, see, like with Karen and me, I could have never married a confident woman. Because I was too sick emotionally. I was unhealthy emotionally. I had a lot of insecurity, a lot of fear inside of me, but I mask it by being confident. And I didn't know that. I didn't understand that until I received Christ and the Holy Spirit began to do surgery on my heart and all these things began to be exposed. But when Karen and I got married, you know, it just simply didn't work. It was dysfunctional. But I was attracted to her because she accommodated me emotionally, and she was attracted to me because I accommodated her emotionally. She needed a man with the self-confidence that she didn't have, and I needed a woman that would accommodate my ego. So we were a match, okay? Women, a very assertive woman, always marries a very passive man. Two dominant people can't marry each other because there would be a murderer quickly. Okay, you know, two very passive people can't marry because they would starve to death because they can't decide where to eat lunch. And so, you know, you always marry to your level of emotional health. Health marries health, unhealth marries unhealth. So Karen and I, see, God put us together. You might say, Jimmy, that doesn't sound like God put you together. God put us together as broken people, but God put us together as healed people. Isn't it beautiful that God can do that? So when I'm using my hands here, you're somewhere on this scale. I don't know where you are, okay? But I'm going to tell you, if you're not in this range, you have problems. There's disrespect. There's lost intimacy. There's frustration. There's those kinds of things. Now, when I asked you earlier to raise your hand if, you know, one of your parents was clearly dominant over the other one, mine was. Okay. Most of you had bad examples. Okay. So one of the things that we have to overcome in becoming healthy is overcoming those bad examples. Now, here are the five causes of dominance, basic causes of dominance. Number one is just a strong personality. A choleric, you know, a lion type of personality, but they call it a choleric personality. I have a strong personality, I just do. And I'm a leader. God, one of the giftings on my life is being a leader. Karen is not. I mean, she's a wonderful, strong person now in the Lord. But I just have a stronger personality than her, and I can talk faster than her. And one of the things, when we first got married, she would get so frustrated, and she would say, you know, you can just talk all the time, and I can't talk as fast as you. And see, typically in most marriages, there's a fast talker and a slow talker. And there's a person who's never at a loss for words, and there's another person 2 days later goes, I wish I'd have said, you know. And so in our relationship, I'm never at a loss for words. Karen, you know, 2 days later will say, my strong personality just was overbearing within the relationship. And we would get into an argument. I was a prosecuting attorney, and I could make my case extremely well. And, you know, so Karen was so frustrated in our relationship because of the strength of my personality that was not submitted to the Holy Spirit. And I'm going to talk about this more in just a minute. But some of you ladies have a strong leader personality, and your husbands don't. Some of you ladies are fast talkers. Now, all ladies are talkers. I can tell you that right now. But some of you are fast talkers. And some of the husbands are slow talkers or don't talk as much. And so you have a naturally dominant personality that you have to learn to deal with. The second reason for dominance is fear. Sometimes stress, but especially fear. Let me say this. Because we fear being controlled, we control. Some of the most controlling people I've ever met are people that fear being controlled. And so they're just tyrants. They're just terrible. Another is iniquities and inner vows. An iniquity is a tendency to a sin because of the sins of our parents. God said, I'll visit the iniquities of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. Okay, the word iniquity is the word avon in the Hebrew language, A-V-O-N, and it means to bend or twist. If you've ever seen a tree that's blown by a predominant wind and you notice that tree grows like this, when you're raised in a family and there's anger, there's chauvinism, there's sexism, there's whatever it is, and it's wrong, you end up with a natural bent toward that. Now, if you came out of a family system of male dominance, you probably have that bent. If you came out of a family system of female dominance, because you'll find this generationally, you'll find it in a mother, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, a father, a grandfather, a great-grandfather. And so there's this natural tendency toward that type of behavior. An inner vow is the opposite. An inner vow is we go through pain. Jesus said in Matthew 5, you don't swear by heaven or by earth. You let your yes be yes and your no be no, because anything more than this is of the evil one. And he said, whoa, what do you mean? You know, I can't swear. And he said, you perform your oaths to the Lord. Well, when we're going through pain in life in general, but especially when we're children, we make ourselves promises to comfort ourselves. It's comforting. And so I'm going through pain and I say to myself, no one will ever treat me like this again. I'll never be poor again. A woman will never treat me like this again. A man will never treat me like this again. I'm not coming back here. Well, what happens when you make an inner vow is that, first of all, Jesus is never Lord of the area where you have a vow. If you say, no, I'll ever be poor again, Jesus is not the Lord of your finances. If you say, no one's ever going to treat me like that again, Jesus is not the Lord of your relationships. The other thing that happens when you make an inner vow is you become a little crazy and unteachable. In that area, you just go crazy. So I counseled a man that his wife had never been in his home. His wife had never been in his home. And I just thought, that was a little odd. Excuse me. That's just a little odd. And I questioned him. Why didn't your wife get to come in the home? Made him mad. Made him mad as fire. Very successful guy. You know, very sharp-looking guy, very successful, very intelligent guy. But when I asked him the question, because I was doing marriage counseling, I was trying to help he and his wife reconcile their issues. So he goes off when I ask him that question. And here was his response. He spent all of his life watching his mother emasculate his father. And he said, no woman will ever do that to me. So he made an inner vow. It made him a little crazy. And he thought he was the smartest man on earth for keeping his wife in an apartment and never letting her in the home. His guarantee that she would never dominate him was she didn't get to come in the home. That kind of helps. You know, someone who's never there can't control you, right? He's crazy. Crazy as a bed bug. And I told him that. And I said, you need to forgive your mother and you need to break this vow off of your life because it's controlling you and it's keeping you from the marriage that you should have. And so, but that's what happens. Iniquities and inner vows. When we have iniquities in our family systems, we just need to recognize it and say, there was chauvinism in my family. There was chauvinism in my family. My grandfather was one of my favorite people, the biggest chauvinist in the history of the world. My uncle, his brother, my great uncle, his brother, his wife did everything and he did nothing. And my father one day said to him, How do you have your wife do all this stuff? And here's what my great uncle said to my dad. He said, ML, there's no use in having a dog and doing your own barking. That was his philosophy on women. There's no use in having a dog and doing your own barking. In other words, I got a wife, why would I do it? I've got a wife. That was my family system that I came out of. When I married Karen, I watched that and I thought, A, that's of Jesus. And B, I want one of them. You know, I want a wife that does all. I did. And when, I didn't know when I got married Karen that she didn't train well. I kept trying to train her. You know, I kept trying to train her to be like the Stepford wives in my family that were married, you know, miserably married in my family. Thank God I had a godly wife that rebelled against it in a godly way. Karen just wouldn't do that. And it frustrated me to death. And I had to break the iniquity of chauvinism off of my life and say, I forgive my parents. I forgive my family system. But I reject that as being sin, and Jesus, teach me how to treat women. That's how you break an iniquity. The way you break an inner vow is say, Lord, I was just hurting. I didn't mean anything by it. But I realized that because I said that, you're not Lord of that area, and I'm a little crazy, and I'm unteachable. And I break this inner vow off of my life. I said, I'd never be poor. Lord, I'll be anything you want me to be. Teach me how to deal with money. I said, people would never treat me like that. Now I'm just, I'm kind of weird. Lord, I repent. Teach me how to deal with people. Teach me how to deal with men. Teach me how to deal with women. Literally. I had inner vows in my life. When I was a kid, we were not in poverty, but we lived next door to it. And I had two shirts and one pair of pants as a young man going to school every day. And it shamed me. And, I just felt ashamed of the fact that I just didn't have any clothing. And when Karen and I got married, we didn't have any money, But I said to myself when I was growing up, if I ever have money, I'm going to have clothes. And fast forward 20 years. And so, we finally had a little bit of money. And Karen said to me one day, Jimmy, you have too many clothes. And I said, no, I don't, Karen. The closets in our house are just too small. When I walked into a clothing store, I just went tilt. You can't have too many clothes. And when Karen said that to me, I thought, how dare you? How dare you suggest that a human being can have too many clothes? But I remember, as well as anything, standing in front of my closet as a teenage boy trying to be popular and having two shirts and one pair of pants to choose from every single day, how shameful that was and how comforting it was for me to say to myself, if I ever have money, I'll have clothes. And that man that wouldn't let his wife in the house had that inner vow in his life that no woman will ever treat me like that again. So he couldn't even deal with women at all. You have to break those things. Bitterness and unforgiveness is another root issue of control and dominance. If we're unforgiving, and it really could be even that we're not forgiving toward a mother or a father or someone in our past. It's especially true of our spouse, but it could be true of an ex-spouse. Because I haven't forgiven, and see, it doesn't matter who you're mad at, your spouse gets the worst of it. You can be mad at Joe down the street, but your spouse is going to get the worst of it. And so bitterness and unforgiveness are a big deal. So let me talk just a minute about what to do if you're being dominated and what to do if you're dominant. Okay. So having said everything that I've just said, if you're being dominated, you just have to be honest with your own issues. Karen is an example of this, is that you have to be honest and just say, I'm being dominated, okay? And don't deny it, don't sugarcoat it, I'm being dominated. The second thing you have to do is just stand up. It's like a teeter-totter. You know, when you're on a teeter-totter with someone, what you do directly affects them. When you change, your marriage changes. You're not a victim. You don't have to wait for your spouse to change. When you change, the equilibrium of the relationship changes. So here's what Karen did. So we have this teeter-totter, and here we were. As Karen began to get healed, Psalm 107:20 says, God sent his word to heal them and to deliver them from their destructions. Okay? Well, every morning Karen would wake up from the day we got married. Karen has never not read the Bible in our entire married lives. Even when she didn't believe it, even when she hated herself and thought she couldn't be saved. Every day she read the Bible. The Bible healed Karen. I didn't. The Bible did. God's word healed my wife. And as Karen began to get healed, one of the manifestations of her emotional health improving was she began to stand up to me. Lovingly. She just began to stand up. Well, again, the equilibrium changes. When you change, everything changes. So Karen began to force me to be more humble in accommodating of her by doing this, and my response was, you get out of the house. The night that she stood up to me, I told you get out of the house. And that was the old chauvinist, dominant Jimmy that died that night. Thank God. She began to stand up to me. When she did it, forced the issue. And she did it lovingly. She did it righteously, but she did it. You can insist on respect, and you can insist on having a voice. And let me say, some people are dominated because they're emotionally lazy. And you're being dominated, but you don't have to think. Someone's doing all your thinking for you. And you've got to, but you're miserable. You have to make up your mind, I'm not going to be emotionally lazy anymore. I'm going to pay the price to be heard and be respected. I'm going to do it righteously, but I'm going to do it. Okay, I'm not going to accommodate the dominance of my spouse. If you're the dominant person, you got to sit down. You got to humble yourself, and you've got to accommodate your spouse. Now, listen to me. I will not make a decision without Karen Evans, period. Every significant decision we make together. 1,000 times she says to me, Jimmy, you just make the decision, I'm fine. 1,000 times I say, no. No. And I never pressure her. I never nag at her. She never pays a price. And what I say to her, the unity in our marriage is more important than any decision we're making. And wherever we go, we're going together. And if it takes you an extra day, an extra week, an extra year, I'm waiting until you're ready. You pray. You get all the information you need. We'll talk until you're ready because we're a team. And everything we do together under the lordship of Jesus Christ. And what that creates in our marriage is intimacy. And as a dominant man, I'm naturally dominant with a strong personality. As a dominant man, what I have to do is sit down. Sit down. So how did our marriage get healed? Karen stood up and I sat down. Karen began to assert herself. She began to stop accommodating my ego, which was wrong and sinful. She just began to lovingly insist on respect and insist on having a voice. I sat down. And now we're here. Karen dominates me. No, honestly, what I say to Karen is, you're too healed. I'm asking Jesus to take away some of your healing. Because that sister is a lioness of God. I'm telling you. So, but I guarantee you one thing. We have an equal marriage. You know, that sister's healed. So, I don't know where you are, but you're somewhere. Health marries health. Unhealth marries unhealth. And most of us come out of unhealthy family systems. But listen, you can break the iniquities off of your family and the inner vows off of your family, and you can be the first healthy couple in your family. Isn't that a good thing? Don't you like that? Karen and I made the decision we're the end of all of the iniquities of the Smith and Evans family. Her maiden name was Smith. And we look at our son and his wife and our daughter and her husband, and they're light years beyond us, and we love that. To pass on health to our children as we experience marriage as partners the way God designed.
Thank you for listening. This is the conclusion of the series Return to Intimacy by Jimmy Evans. For more information or additional resources by Jimmy Evans, visit the Marriage Today website at marriagetoday.com.